Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Wednesday, August 28, 2013. Happy birthday to my brother, Roby. And today we honor Dr. Martin Luther King on the 50th anniversary of his I Have a Dream speech.
Anybody here seen my old friend Martin? Can you tell me where he's gone?
This song has always had an effect on me. Dion DiMucci was a white rock star with Dion and the Belmonts in the early 60s. And this was the only political song that I know of that he recorded. Came out about 1970 after we'd lost John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and of course Bobby Kennedy. Someday, soon. And today, on the Mall in Washington, D.C., many speeches at the Lincoln Memorial. And I have no criticism of those who, for any reason, gather or pause to offer their respects to the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. He made quite an impact on my life. As a white kid growing up in segregated Cincinnati, I was first kind of politically aroused by John F. Kennedy in 1960. And then became aware of the issues of segregation when my dad moved us to Central Florida for a year. And the kind of subsurface racism of Cincinnati and the clear segregation there was accented. And as a young boy, I saw those signs that say colored only, white only. We lived in Winter Haven, Florida, and there was an area that was limited to African Americans, called Negroes politely at the time, or niggers by rednecks in the South. Nigras was a term that was used by those who were trying to observe a little bit of political correctness, but couldn't bring themselves to say Negro. And the area where the blacks lived near Winter Haven was called Colored Town. And those impressions were then fueled by the activism of Dr. King, Selma, many other events in the Deep South, culminating in the March on Washington in 1963. And PAC journalism is doing a decent job of covering these events, but it's often way too polite. And while there is no doubt that we have made progress in race relations and ending the ugly racism and segregation that is a deep part of America's legacy, we have come nowhere near to creating a colorblind society. And in honor of Dr. King, I'll let you watch Oprah Winfrey and the great John Lewis and the president and others and their speeches in Washington today. But I have two key comments. One is that institutional racism is still very present in American life. And you only have to look at the Supreme Court's late June decision invalidating the active portion of the Voting Rights Act and see the states of Texas, North Carolina, and others rush through that gauntlet to deny voting rights to individuals who are most likely to be non-white. Often elderly, often brown or black. And as Barack Obama stands up and moves more to the center as an African-American / president, the Justice Department is taking some baby steps to crack down on Texas. I haven't seen anything filed against North Carolina, and I think the battle may be lost in North Carolina. And so there's a lot of great rhetoric out there, but where are the actions? What is being done to address the disparity of income and wealth in America? which is most unfair to blacks in this country. And while Eric Holder has announced that he wants to end the mass incarceration of largely African Americans in our prison systems, federal and state, it's time to see some action. Yesterday we talked about the need to reschedule marijuana. It's not a class one drug like heroin. It's not even a class two drug like meth. But everybody's too afraid to take the steps to make those changes. And so we continue to have inner city blacks with limited employment opportunities who turn to the drug culture simply to get by. And of course, after they've been in contact with the justice system and gone to prison, they can't get a real job. And so gangs and drugs are a natural fallback. And Barack Obama, through his bad economic policies, his failure to punish the wealthy who plundered our country, has done very little to make meaningful change. And beyond the institutional racism, we now have a kind of casual racism that we see flaunted in the media on almost a daily basis. Started with Rush Limbaugh making fun of the Reverend Jesse Jackson. I'm not the biggest fan of Jesse Jackson. He doesn't need me to defend him. But Limbaugh's attacks were dog whistle racism. And Laura Ingraham, who aspires to be the next Rush Limbaugh in right-wing hate radio in this country, was doing her own coverage, and she's entitled to comment on the 50th anniversary of Dr. King, just like any American. And I defend her First Amendment rights. But what she did was play an excerpt from John Lewis's speech 50 years ago. And John Lewis is a man who I met and talked to and have just incredible respect for. And he's a forgiving man, not a hateful individual. So she played an excerpt from his speech. He was the youngest person to speak at the March on Washington 50 years ago. And when she decided to cut off the excerpt she was playing, she inserted the sound effect of a crackling gunshot. And if you listen to the music of Dion as he runs through the American leaders who have been slain by guns, and when you think of other African Americans from Malcolm X to Medgar Evers to Fred Hampton, the Black Panther leader in Chicago, it is just sick, twisted, and completely inexcusable. It's not First Amendment. It is racist to entertain small-minded white people with that kind of crap. More news and comment in a moment as we move to the war drums getting louder about a coordinated assault on Syria. I want to thank all the people who support the Peter B. Collins Show with your subscriptions. Every day I get a little notice from PayPal that says that, for example, Gary Batterson or the Multitask Man, Andrew Rush, Janet Price, that their monthly subscription payments have been made. And that's what keeps me going here. The cash helps pay my expenses, but it is the validation of your support that is really important to me. So if you haven't subscribed yet, here's your chance. Go to my website, peterbcollins.com. Follow the link that says sign up under my picture in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage. You got options, $5 a month, cancel anytime. Our best deal is the $50 annual subscription that brings you also a bag of Kona coffee, courtesy of Russ Archibald on the Big Island, a copy of Sybelle Edmonds' Classified Woman. I have just a few on hand here left. And I still have a couple of the Bradley Manning, free Bradley Manning stickers, little round stickers that you can put on a refrigerator or a computer. That's where I keep mine. So, step up. I'll be much obliged. PeterBCollins.com. The other way you can support us is to steer your web business to GoDaddy.com. They have the best deals on domain name registration and web hosting. Have you heard this one? The screaming deal that starts at $1.99 a month with unlimited storage and bandwidth with your web hosting, and a free domain name? To get a special deal that supports the Peter B. Collins Show, follow the GoDaddy link. It's at the top of the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com. And I dug into the PBC tax-deductible music archives. There's a band from San Francisco called The Looters.
Foaming mouth of the broadcast hall, gangrene dripping from every pore.
Yes, the media whores are amplifying the sound of the war drums. And while the Obama administration has cracked down on leakers like Chelsea Manning, and they want to crack down on Ed Snowden, well, they're leaking like mad right now because unnamed officials told NBC News that the 3 days of airstrikes against Syria could start as early as Thursday. That's tomorrow. Monday night, four U.S. warships were deployed in the Mediterranean within cruise missile range of Syria. The Royal Air Force has been very active near the island of Cyprus, according to independent reports. And the only real complication is that there are still... Now, when I say complication, I'm speaking from the point of view of people who want this attack on Syria. There are still UN inspectors in Damascus. Now, certainly, we could select targets in other parts of the country. But this target selection, again, I'm just thinking along the lines of those who support this effort. They have to make sure that they don't hit any of the chemical weapons depots. I believe there are 9 of them scattered around the nation of Syria. And if you have a partial strike on one of those, you might not only unleash chemical weapons in the surrounding area and put thousands or even millions of people at risk, but you might have a partial strike that compromises a facility and allows rebels or any other opportunists to go in and grab chemical weapons. That's just one of the obvious risks of this incredibly risky set of ideas that seems to be almost imminent. And I hope when I talk to you tomorrow I can say, well, they were wrong about Thursday. That's a relief. But this is moving so swiftly. The Obama team has basically cornered the Assad government with a pack of lies. And, of course, because they are a brutal dictatorship that has killed tens of thousands of their own people, anything they say cannot be believed. And this is a page from the playbook that was used against Saddam Hussein in Iraq. He told the truth when he said Iraq didn't have WMD in 2002 and 2003. And maybe you've heard me tell this story before. I've talked to Dan Rather many years after the fact. He got the last exclusive interview with Saddam Hussein before we invaded in March of 2003. And Rather asked him if Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Saddam said no. And I asked Dan Rather, did you believe him? And Dan said no. Never occurred to him. Well, the Syrian foreign minister categorically denies that his country has used chemical weapons. At a press conference in Damascus Tuesday, he challenged the world to provide evidence that the Syrian government was behind last week's alleged chemical weapons attack in eastern Ghouta, the suburb of Damascus. We are all hearing, this is a quote, the drums of war being beaten around us. If these countries are willing to launch an aggression or military act against Syria, I believe the pretext of chemical weapons is false, baseless, and groundless. As I said, I dare them to produce any single piece of evidence. Now, he could be bluffing. He could be talking right through his hat, right out his ass. But shouldn't we be sure? It appears that they've created the perception that this is a no-brainer, that bad guys deserve to be spanked. But our spanking could lead to a regional war that could easily escalate into a world war. And we gave you Andrew Bacevich's three big questions yesterday, and the big one really echoes Colin Powell's doctrine. How long do we stay, and how do we get the hell out? Now, it's gotten further complicated. As Bashar Jafari, Syria's ambassador to the United Nations, said today, Wednesday, that he has submitted evidence of three previously unreported instances of chemical weapons use in Syria, which he asserted has been carried out by insurgents. Jafari said the Syrian government has requested UN investors expand their inquiry to include these events, which he said occurred on August 22nd, 24th, and 25th, also in the Damascus suburbs. He said Syrian soldiers were the targets. Now, let me be clear. I haven't seen any pictures of Syrian soldiers with symptoms of a chemical weapons attack. And it's easy to look at this and say this is a delaying tactic. This is just smoke. But I think we have to open our minds enough to allow that maybe the Syrians are telling the truth, or at least a partial truth. And because Obama laid down the gauntlet that if chemical weapons are used, there'll be foreign intervention, think back to Iraq and the Iraqi National Congress, the front group funded by first the CIA and then the Pentagon. Its head was Ahmad Chalabi. And they were so desperate to get the U.S. to invade Iraq in 02 and 03 that they brought us Curveball, the phony mobile weapons labs, all kinds of concoctions. And Chalabi later freely admitted, I would have done anything to get the U.S. to invade. And I did. And I just think that we need to step back, remind ourselves that we've been snookered with this, WMDs, we've got to do something, before. And let's see if we can stop this. Let's see if rational and cooler heads will prevail. Some quickies for you here in the U.S. Kudos to some courageous county clerks in the state of New Mexico. Because today, men are marrying men and women are marrying women in Albuquerque and three other counties. Two other population centers in the state of New Mexico. Now, I want to give credit to the county clerk, Donna Anna, who decided to begin issuing marriage licenses to gays and lesbians last Wednesday. And then 2 days later, a judge in Santa Fe ordered the county clerk there to follow suit. Now, I don't quite understand the legal basis of all this, but my bias is that this is civil rights, this is equal rights, it's marriage equality. And even if it's an imperfect way to achieve it, good on you and good luck to the newlyweds in New Mexico. We now have, for the first time, a woman leading the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. Lieutenant General Michelle Johnson took command on August 15th. Took her 32 years since she graduated from the Air Force Academy until she was appointed its first female superintendent. And forgive me, it was August 12th, not the 15th, that she took over. And this is under the cloud of the sexual assault crisis in the military. And I'm very pleased that a woman is in charge there, and it could lead to some major improvements and changes, and an end to the sexual assault of women serving in the military. And men as well, let's not forget that. But to me, the real problem at the Air Force Academy is rampant Christianism. Because since the days of the sex scandals at the Air Force Academy in the early 1990s, we have seen this dramatic shift where there is pressure on cadets to basically be openly Christian. And there are lectures in Christian themes that advance militarism. I'm stretching for words here. And it led to the founding of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation by Mikey Weinstein, because his two sons and daughter-in-law all attended the Air Force Academy. They're Jewish. And they felt locked out of the Christian cabal that has taken over at the Air Force Academy. I hope that the new commander, Michelle Johnson, will equally crack down on sex offenders as she does on religious extremists. Now to some nukes in the news. The problems at Fukushima in Japan continue to spin and spiral out of control. And today, Japan's government has announced it will lead emergency measures to deal with the radioactive water that is collected there and is spilling out into the sea near the nuclear power plant. And they've decided that TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, is not able to handle it. And so the trade minister told reporters today, from now on, the government will move to the forefront. This is problematic, though, because the new prime minister, Shinzo Abe, wants to restart all the other nuke plants around Japan that have been idled since Fukushima. And so it's very hard to put any faith in his efforts to deal with this leak problem other than to massage the public relations. But over 300 metric tons of highly radioactive water has been leaking, and some of it is leaking into the sea. They have appointed the president of Japan, Naomi Hirose, to lead a task force to deal with the issue of storage of contaminated water. Good news for those of us opposed to the risks of nuclear power. Entergy Corporation announced yesterday that the Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Station is in its final phase. When the current fuel cycle runs its course, they will shut it down. That's estimated to occur next year in the fourth quarter of 2014. I believe this is the third or fourth nuclear power plant that has been closed ahead of schedule this year. We've got San Onofre in California, one in Florida, and can't think of where the other one is, but there is a bit of a trend there. And I want to point you to a great op-ed column that was published in last Sunday's New York Times, written by Mark Bittman. I don't know who Mark Bittman is. But he responds to the recent press about Pandora's Promise, a pro-nuclear documentary film that includes support from James Hansen, the NASA scientist and climate change expert, along with Stuart Brand from here in California. And they're promoting nuclear power as a way to address climate change. They say it's a less objectionable alternative to generating power from coal. But Bittman is posing the right questions. He says, before we all become pro-nuclear greens, you got to ask three questions. Is nuclear power safe and clean? Is it economical? And are there better alternatives? And he answers, no, it's not safe and clean. No, it's not economical. And yes, there are better alternatives. Despite all-out efforts and international cooperation, Fukushima, which scared Germany right out of the nuclear power business, still isn't under control. Proponents of nuclear power promise new and safer technology, but these discussions are filled with coulds. No such plants exist, nor would they reduce the risks of proliferation. He raises an issue that doesn't get mentioned much, which is the dangers of uranium mining, which uses vast amounts of water in the West. Then there's the disposal of spent fuel. The economic viability issue is no more encouraging, he says. Plants continue to close, generation rates continue to drop. Operators may indeed continue to make money on reactors, but that's only because federal subsidies are enormous. Some clear thinking there on nuclear power. I'm glad to see it. And finally today, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is now the oldest serving justice on the Supreme Court at the age of 80, gave a feisty interview to Sunday's New York Times. And you may recall she's had cancer twice. And after the second bout was announced, Senator Tom Coburn, I believe I have this right, of Oklahoma, said, she's a goner. And, started jockeying about who would replace her on the Supreme Court. Well, I think her purpose in the interview was twofold. One was to slam the Roberts Court and its right-wing majority for its activism, calling it one of the most activist courts in history, and that's accurate. It's unusual for a sitting justice to slam the court she's on. I'm happy to hear it. And the other piece is, she did it to prove how healthy she is and that she's not going to be checking out anytime soon. She even said that she's willing to wait for Obama's successor to appoint her replacement. But to accentuate her active and healthy condition, she says, well, I don't water ski anymore. I haven't gone horseback riding in the last 4 years, but I haven't ruled out that entirely. But water skiing, those days are over. Well, I hope that maybe the next time a waterboarding case comes before the court, you'll use your water ski experience there, Justice Ginsburg. Thanks for joining me for News and Comment today. I remain your humble host, Peter B. Collins, and I invite your comments, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until